I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Last night, the Liberal Party of Canada won the general election, and Justin Trudeau is to become the next Prime Minister of Canada. Adam Dyfala joins me now as we look at what happened in the country. How did Trudeau win? Why did the country vote Liberal in surprising numbers? What is Stephen Harper's legacy as he leaves off the office of Prime Minister? What happened to the NDP and Thomas Mulcair? What might we expect in the next 4 years? We'll tackle some of these questions now. Adam Dyfala is a partner at the Strategic Communications and Government Relations Consulting firm Hatley Strategy Advisors. He is also chair of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation's board. He is an instructor at McGill's Department of North American Studies and a frequent commentator on political matters on various outlets. The websites for more are at hatleystrategies.com and dyfala.com. Please welcome back to the Plante on the Line program in Montreal today, Adam Dyfala. Mr. Dyfala, good morning.
Hello, how are you, Joseph?
Pretty good, yourself?
Good, thanks.
I understand you saw Justin Trudeau this morning.
Yeah, I did. I was walking through the Queen Elizabeth Hotel, which I'm sure some listeners will know of or have stayed at. I was just walking through the lobby, and I saw his bus pull up, and out he walked. He walked out by himself, and he had some security guards in front of him, but he went through the lobby, shook a few hands, and then went into the elevator and went upstairs. And I saw after I got back to the office that he had, earlier that morning, before going to the hotel, had gone into a subway stop in Montreal and shaken some hands of citizens on the subway. So I guess that's probably a good indication of the style of politician he's going to be, which is a marked contrast, of course, with Stephen Harper.
So Stephen Harper last night, when he gave his speech, said that the public are never wrong.
I hate that expression.
Isn't it an awful phrase?
Horrible.
Yeah, but were they correct then in the result that happened?
Well, first of all, I mean the whole politicians are never wrong, or the voters are never wrong line is just something that politicians use who don't want to face up to the real reasons why they lost a campaign. It's just to explain it away. It's almost like a cop out, really. Yeah. So, you know, were they right? The main thing about this campaign, well, there's two things. Reason number one as to why, and excuse the siren in the background. My office is downtown, and there's an ambulance going by. Yeah. Reason number one is that there was a very strong desire for change, and after 10 years of being in government, that's not something that's very unusual. Right, that happens a lot. Chrétien was in for about 10 years, Mulroney for 9, and Trudeau Père about 14, with an interregnum of conservatives for 9 months in between his second and third term.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a strong desire for change, and it's difficult for incumbent parties, without completely renewing their leadership, to overcome that desire. The second thing is the conservatives just didn't run a good campaign, and I think they would admit that, and the speeches last night by the party leaders, including Mulcair's, sort of hinted to me that all three of the leaders knew what was coming yesterday long before voting even began. They were all composed, and you could tell they were resigned to the lots that they had been assigned by the voters. So I think Harper knew that this was the outcome probably days ago and maybe even weeks ago. And that's it. So it's the end of a very unusual period in Canadian federal politics, because Stephen Harper is really the first Canadian Prime Minister who's governed as a conservative with a small c, mm-hmm, in the modern era. And only time is going to tell, after the leadership race is over for the new Tory leader and after the next conservative government gets into power, and who knows, 4, 8, 12, 16 years, who knows when, whether or not this Harper style of government, of governing as a conservative, was a blip, or whether it is the new, long-lasting conservatism that we'll see in Canada.
But he's left the party in good shape, hasn't he? I mean, if we were to believe sort of his critics, a year ago, 6 months ago, I mean, he would have lost probably more dramatically than he did.
Well, it depends on what you mean by leaving the party in good shape. If you mean a solid caucus that's still fairly populous, then yes, the Conservatives have 99 MPs, which is not a bad opposition. But I think there's certainly some rebuilding to do on the policy front, internally with the Conservative Party, and structurally. I think it will be interesting to see how that all plays out, because like every party that's been in power for a long time, structures and volunteer bases and party headquarters, and they atrophy. And I think we're only going to know in a few weeks and months, when we see who sort of stays around and who jumps off the ship, what kind of condition the Conservative Party is in. And I also saw this morning that apparently the party's in debt, which must have mean they've spent a fortune, because they had so much money going into this election campaign. So if it's true that they're in debt now, it's very difficult to raise money when you're in opposition. So that's going to be another big challenge for the next leader.
So to the victor, how did Trudeau pull this off? His party was in third place. There were low expectations on him. I mean, I remember one conservative saying that just before the first debate, if he came with his pants on, he'd do fine. And
yep.
This morning he's prime minister, or soon to be prime minister.
Yep, he's prime minister designate, I think is apparently the appropriate term. And the line that you used was from Corey Tenike, who was the campaign spokesperson for the Conservative Party. I think you hit the nail on the head with your preamble, which is he came into the campaign with low expectations. He did, and he surpassed those expectations. So when expectations are low, if you do anything better than disastrous, you look like you're doing well. And the fact is, he performed well at, well, I was going to say the first debate, but realistically, he performed well in all the debates.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he comes across as a bit shallow. Yes, he uses a lot of platitudes and hackneyed phrases, but he comes across well. He looks good. He sounds good in both languages. So he's a good public presenter. And, you know, what happened was that he didn't make any major gaffes. He did not make any big mistakes. And the impression of the Liberals as the clear alternative to the people that didn't like Harper and wanted change only solidified as the campaign went on. And I think at the end of last week, it was pretty clear, according to the polls, that the Liberals were going to win this thing. But over the weekend, I believe there was another shift in the voting base, where further voters who were undecided, or further voters who were maybe soft NDP supporters, shifted again to the Liberals, which is what made the difference between a minority and a majority.
So how did Mulcair do? I mean, he screwed this up pretty badly, didn't he?
Well, from one perspective, yes. From another perspective, no. From the yes perspective, he was official opposition. But that was a campaign that was run and won by Jack Layton, not him.
Mm.
And the NDP has now taken their, let's call it, their, has resumed their historical place, you know, as a distant third party. 30 and 40 seats is not historically unusual for the NDP. The let's call it the Layton interregnum from 2011 was something that we hadn't seen before. So the pressure on Mulcair was very high and the expectations were high, but for him to keep that amount of support and seats was going to be a pretty tall order. And as we saw last night, a big part of his voting base was in Quebec, and those voters are extremely fickle, right? You had something that I don't know if I've ever seen before, and I'd like to... I haven't had time to check the stats, but the Liberal Party won a seat last night called Jonquière in Quebec,
mm-hmm.
where in the 2011 election, they got 2.71% of the popular vote.
Huh.
I don't know if there's ever been a case in history where someone has gone from so little one election before to winning a riding. So it just shows you how volatile and fickle the Quebec voters are. So did Mulcair fail? Yes, yeah, objectively looking at it, especially given what he was going into the campaign with. But he's basically back to where the NDP historically has been, and I don't think he stated his intentions yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to stick around as leader.
I was going to ask you, because you're in Montreal today, what is it about Quebec voters? Because they go from the Bloc Québécois, I guess in 08, years before that, and then 2011, of course, they voted NDP, and then last night, in large numbers for the Liberal Party. I mean, for a lot of us in other parts of the country, that just seems weird.
Yeah, it's hard to explain. I guess a part of it is, and I have no scientific proof of this, it's just my own personal theory, but Quebec is a lapsed Catholic society, but the Catholic culture of Quebec is still very much present in the society. And part of that is that I feel a lot of decision-making is made based on emotion, more so than in the English or Anglo-Saxon world. So there's a lot more, I guess the only word really is emotion. And mm-hmm. It was an emotional reaction on the NICAB, for example, because cultural issues are very important in Quebec society. And when Harper and Duceppe spoke about the NICAB, it struck a chord with certain voters in Quebec. But also the dislike for Harper, a visceral emotional dislike of Harper, was widespread in Quebec. So I think that also gave ammunition to the Liberals, because as the campaign went on, it became clear that they were the ones that had the best chance at beating Stephen Harper.
Now, I haven't looked at the percentage of the Bloc's vote, but I'm assuming it's the same from 2011, but this time they have something like 10 seats.
They have 10 seats now.
As opposed to, say, 2 or 4, whatever they had at dissolution. So what is the state of the separatist movement in Quebec?
Oh, it's still very, very troubled. I wouldn't interpret the 10 Bloc MPs as being a vote for sovereignty. It's just a vote in areas of the province that are very nationalistic, but who were seeing their local candidate as the most obvious choice to defeat the Conservatives, probably. I don't think that the 10 seats that were won by the Bloc will give any boost of any kind to the PQ provincially or to Pierre-Carl Péladeau, but you have to credit them with a bit of a comeback, because a lot of people thought this would be the election that they die permanently after mm-hmm. the bloodletting they took last time. But they are back, even though Gilles Duceppe lost his own riding. They are back, but not in a really significant way.
A lot of people are talking about how the Liberals and Trudeau outflanked the NDP by going to the left of the NDP. What does that mean for the next 4 years? And because Trudeau now has a great laundry list of expectations, a lot of promises that he's made. What do you foresee for the next 4 years?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. Well, he's essentially got carte blanche to do whatever he wants for the next 4 years. He has a sizable majority government, so I would expect him to not waste much time and to get right down to it, and that he'll implement his economic proposals fairly quickly. I don't know if there'll be a fall budget maybe or maybe just some kind of an economic statement, but I mean his platform was fairly clear, right? He's going to raise taxes on high income earners. He's going to eliminate the universal child care benefit and replace it with something else. He's apparently going to take Canada out of the combat mission against ISIS in Syria and Iraq. I would expect him to get going on that stuff right away, but before he does that, he needs to name his cabinet, of course, and get sworn in. That takes at least 1 or 2 weeks, maybe even up to 3 weeks, but I expect him to get moving fairly quickly.
And what do you make of just the public's, I guess, vote for moving away from balanced budgets and a different way of looking at the budget, looking at the economy, than, say, we've been used to the last 9 years or even governments previous to Harper's?
Yeah, I've never been a big believer that voters care that much about balanced budgets. I think that most people, it is such an intangible thing for people. It's a number on a piece of paper that nobody can ever dream of in terms of its grandeur. It's intangible. It's not something that voters can physically touch. So I don't think it's something voters care that much about, and I don't think they were voting for or against anyone in this campaign based on balancing the budgets or deficits. I just don't.
And as to what happens with the Conservative Party, now that Mr. Harper has signaled his intention to resign, who replaces him in the interim, and would that, say, be the leader into the next election?
That's a great question, to which I don't know the answer. My guess is there's probably going to be an interim leader like a Dianne Finley, maybe, or somebody who would be... a credible caretaker leader who's probably not going to run, definitely not going to run for permanent leader, and somebody who would be willing to sort of take the reins of the party and lead them in the House for the next 6 months to a year. And then the leadership race will start. It is already starting, I think, and that's going to be very interesting. And I've always said there's two sort of possible outcomes to who the next leader is, and they're totally different depending on the results last night. So scenario one would be that Harper won again, which he didn't. Uh-huh. If Harper had won again, I think he would have stayed about a year, and that's under a minority and a majority scenario. I think he probably would have only stayed another year, and as a matter of fact, he told that to John Ibbotson for Ibbotson's
the biography.
Bio of Harper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, did you speak to him?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So I think Harper would have left after a year, and the leadership race would have essentially been caucus members against one another. The Jason Kennys, the Lisa Raitts, the probably the James Moore and maybe even Peter McKay, who are recently retired, but it would have been a caucus fight. Option two is Harper loses, and that's what we've had happen. And I think the race is totally different under this scenario, because people are going to say, well, we need a clean break from the Harper years, we need to have a fresh beginning. There'll be a certain chorus of people in the media and amongst the red Tories in the party saying Harper abandoned the progressive wing and the progressive conservative roots of the party and it needs to move more to the center. And those people will call on the likes of Jean Charest and people like that to run for leader. So there'll probably be a lot more non-caucus members. And maybe even a Brad Wall would run if he's interested this time. So it's going to be a really interesting leadership race because it'll be a mix of caucus people and people that have never been involved in the Harper era.
Yeah. Maxime Bernier, is that a name that you've been hearing in terms of say, going for this job?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. I think the chances that he runs are... no lower than 80 or 85%, yes.
Yeah.
He speaks to a certain constituency in the party, the libertarian wing, and he'll be the kind of candidate that will mount a... We lost sight of our principles, and we made things too complicated, and it's time to return to true conservative convictions. He'll run that sort of a campaign, and there's a very good constituency for that in the Conservative Party's membership base.
Now, I first talked to you years ago when you and Tasha Carradine wrote that book about restoring Canada's right. In terms of where the conservative movement is today, a lot of people in say this part of the world, in the West Coast, were talking about how sort of that red Tory tradition of people like Joe Clark or Flora Macdonald. I mean, Pat Carney was talking about voting Liberal this time. Will they have a place, or has the Conservative Party, say, become Harper's Conservative Party?
No, they have a place. They've had a place ever since the new party was founded. I mean, one of Harper's closest advisors on the previous election campaigns was Marjorie Le Breton, who is a friend of mine, my first boss in politics, and definitely not a right-wing conservative. God bless her. So this myth that there's no room in the party for more centrist people is just wrong. But there'll be people in the leadership race that will claim that the party has veered too far right and needs to move more to the center. I personally don't share that opinion.
Yeah.
I think it's issues of style and not substance. But there will be a constituency for that, and there'll be people saying that. But no, there's those that are not in the Conservative Party now have been who in the past have been heavily involved, like party officials or caucus members or ministers, even like Barbara McDougall, have personal access to grind or were slighted in some way. Or, you know, Joe Clark is a good example. Joe Clark was never in the new Conservative Party at all.
Mm.
It's a very small group of people.
Yeah. Well, interesting times, and it's nice to talk again. I hope you've been well, and I appreciate this, Adam.
I have. Thanks, and I'm always happy to do it.
The websites from our HatleyStrategies.com and Difala.com. Adam Difala joined me on the line from Montreal and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunder.